And welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It is hour two here on a Monday edition. Why aren't you religious? I'm Sherry Brownrigg in for Cy Kellett, and Trent Horn is with us today, and he is answering that very question, or asking that very question. He wants to talk to you. Here's the number, 888-318-7884. Why aren't you religious? 888-318-7884. Maybe you are someone who calls yourself spiritual, and you don't have a church or what you call religion. Maybe you're not even really sure what it means to be religious, so you're not quite sure if that label appeals to you. Maybe you've been religious before, been in a church, been a part of a faith, and you have rejected it. Whatever the case is, call in 888-318-7884. It's a great place to call and get some of those questions answered, and we would love to hear from you. 888-318-7884. Trent, you know, both of us are converts to the Catholic faith, and you had a great story where you had a Jewish mother or a Jewish father, and your mother left the faith.
Right.
And I actually was a Methodist growing up. Didn't get baptized till I was six. My father died when I was five, and he was 37 years old and had that that widowmaker heart attack. And he was actually very anti-religious because he saw a lot of things happening in his family that were at the hands of so-called Christians
right.
who were not behaving well at all.
Sure.
But my mother, her father, was a Methodist minister, so we all got baptized after my dad died and became Methodist and, you know, kind of fell away from the church, any church, when I got to college, which I think is a very, very common thing. And my church really was experience. I mean, I was just kind of one of those people that said, okay, what's next? What are we going to do next? What can I experience next? And I'm actually a little bit like that today as well.
Sure.
But I really have to fight against that and, you know, insert God right in the middle. So he, you know, he makes the experiences holy, which is wonderful. But you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. And I'm sure you've heard those kinds of stories many times before.
Yeah. Well, faith can give us many feelings, but faith itself is not a feeling. And
no.
That is why we should be very hesitant to chase after feelings or experiences to think, oh, this is where I found the Holy Spirit, or this is where I found God. That anything where, you know, that kind of mentality, imagine if you applied it to marriage. I mean, you'd end up having like 10 or 20 ex-spouses in your life because you fall in love, you get that high and that feeling, but it fades over time. The love we have for God and the life of faith that we live is not like at first it may start off with a flash in the pan, like that flash of epiphany, but it eventually, like all other loves in our lives, it becomes more of a deep burning coal fire almost. You know, it's just like this deep, warm, resonating fire within us towards God that can't be extinguished by anything in this life because it's fueled by the grace of God given to us through the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that's really deep down in us. And I think that's something I've heard from so many friends who have left the church, probably, well, not so many, maybe four. One guy put it, I think, in a great way to sum up for everyone, where he said, I just feel like in this other church that that's where I'm supposed to be. You know, and my question to him was, because they have basketball leagues?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I play basketball there.
You can play basketball anywhere you want, but there's only one. You can find a basketball hoop almost anywhere, but you're only going to find one church that gives us Christ fully present in the Eucharist, that is in full communion with the tradition given to us from the apostles, in union with the successor of St. Peter, who was chosen by Jesus himself to be the rock upon which our church was built. You're only going to find that in one place. If you follow your feelings, that's going to lead to a lot of bad consequences. Jeremiah 17:9, one of my favorite verses in Scripture, the prophet says that the heart is a deceitful thing above all else. Who can trust it? We think, oh, this is what feels right to me. Well, our feelings lead us astray all the time. Our feelings, at the beginning of human creation, when human beings were in friendship with God in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve felt like it was a good idea to go against what God said and to eat the forbidden fruit and to transgress God's moral boundaries to commit original sin. we all the time, whenever we do a bad thing and we regret it, weren't we motivated at first by a feeling we had deep down in us? But those feelings led us astray. We have to let feelings be something that we control and give light to our life, not something that control us and lead us into misery.
Yeah. Well, what you mentioned about, you know, if we just went by feeling, we'd have 20 spouses. I think that is a real testament to the Christian life, is when you think about, and let's face it, we all do this. If you are married, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Sometimes you just don't feel the love, but you love anyway.
Or try children. I have small children at home. I love them to death, but I think any parent feels the love taxing at around 2:30 in the morning.
That's right.
But you still love them. And so our love is not based upon that our beloved will always be a source of pleasure for us. Mm-hmm. Our love is based on the fact that the object of our love, our beloved, is worthy of our love. Our spouse is worthy of our love in virtue of the matrimonial promises we've made to them. Our children are worthy of our love because of the natural obligations we have to them in virtue of being their parents, that God has given them, entrusted them to us. And God, of course, is naturally worthy of our love because love desires the good, and God is just perfect goodness itself. And so it would naturally follow that we would love God because love means choosing that which is good, and God is just perfect goodness.
Yeah. Does that extend to puppies too?
It does. There are good things to love in puppies, and then there are absences of good that we do not have to love, such as the case of puppies soiling much of the house or tearing the pillows and furniture apart. But there are things that are lovable about them. So there are the goods, and then there's the absence of goods that we try to minimize.
Well, my puppy has not done that, but if you would look at my arms, you would see punctures up and down. She's showing her love in the only way she knows how at this point, until the training kicks in.
Yes, the chewing of the puppy is a good, for they need that to eat and to play. It only becomes an evil when it is misdirected, when they are not gnawing upon their toy bone, but upon your forearm.
Evil puppy. All right, I'll have to tell her
misdirected,
that later.
Misdirected. Never an evil puppy. Just one that has taken a good and used it in a misdirected way.
I'm going to use that phrase on her next time, Trent.
Okay.
You are a bad misdirected puppy.
It's direct towards the good. The good.
I'll use that, direct towards the good. All right, well, we've got time to get one call in here. We've got David, who is calling from Baton Rouge, and he's listening on Sirius XM. Hey, David, we're asking the question, why aren't you religious? But I know you actually would like to get a little bit of help when people kind of tell you why they're not. Is that right?
That's it. I'm religious myself, and sometimes I'm at a loss of what to tell people about why they should be religious. I mean, I could tell them all the benefits of the Catholic faith and all this, but they don't seem to be interested in any religion at all.
Why do you?
I'm wondering how I could approach them.
Why do you think? Are they just indifferent, or do they? Is there something that they object to?
I don't think they object to anything. I think they just haven't. That they figured it out. They could just, you know, do good, and they don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Well, I think what I would say to them, David, is I would ask them, you know, let's say you died and you stood before God, and God is all perfect, and heaven is a place for those. God is all perfect goodness itself, and that compared to Him, we are just muck and filth. I mean, and people will say, "Well, I'm a good person." I would say to them, "Hey, you know what? How would you feel if people could look at every single thought you've ever had?" Or every single thing you've ever done, and it was just laid out. Let's say every single thought you had last week. Would you like people? Most people don't even like others looking at what they wrote on their phones, or what they don't want to see their search history on the internet. And people would peer deep and to see who they were, they wouldn't be so high and mighty about themselves, I think, a lot of times. So I would say that if you imagine you're in heaven, you're in front of God, He's all good, all powerful, He's perfect goodness itself, and He said to you, why should you get to spend eternity with me? What have you done to deserve that? We haven't done anything to deserve that. And if anything, if we were left to our own devices, we wouldn't choose God. How do I know that? God is perfect goodness. Do we choose perfect good every day? No way. You can ask your friends. They may not be religious, but at least they'll say, yeah, I don't always do what's right, but I try. Here's the thing, though. Just relying on yourself, that works okay in this limited life we have. But if you live for eternity, an eternity of just trying to make it amongst human beings like us, doing the best we can, eventually you would deform over that time and your real, raw rebellion against God would come clear. Eternity apart from eternity of anything that's not God is hell. But that's why we need God, and we can't choose God on our own because we're trapped by sin, trapped by the desire to choose evil over good. We need him to save us from that. Why shouldn't we let him do that if he's capable of doing that? So I might offer that, David, in response to people, just a general, you know, as Catholics, we got to get better about talking about salvation, and that salvation means being saved from something. If we don't talk about what, if you don't get the good news, is not that appealing unless you're really afraid of the bad news. And we have to be able to share that with people. So I don't know, David, is that at least a helpful start for you?
Yeah, that's a good start. Yeah, I can start like that and see how that goes. That's a good idea.
Well, and David, I tell you what, stay on the line and give our call screener your email address. I'll send you my book, Why We're Catholic. That might give you a few other nuts of wisdom to chestnuts, I guess, of wisdom to share with these people. So stay on the line, give our call screener your email address, and I'll be sure to send that to you.
All right. Thank you, David. Appreciate that call. Again, listening on Sirius XM, and David's from Baton Rouge. All right, so we are up against a break here, and I want to remind you the phone number, 888-318-7884. The question today is, why aren't you religious? And Trent, I have a feeling there's a lot of folks out there who are like David, and they're thinking, you know, I know a lot of people who are in that. They're not listening right now. They're not going to call, but I need some answers to give them. So why don't we just kind of open it up to more folks like David who are calling in and need to get some real meat, some real answers to help.
I think that would be helpful. So yeah, if you're not religious, or if you're struggling, if you're Catholic and you know someone who's not very religious, could be an atheist, could be a fallen away Catholic, whoever it may be. If you have questions about our faith, about how to reach out to people who are not very religious, bring them to us. Give us a call. I'm happy to walk you through that, just like we were able to walk David through that.
Okay, and the number again, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more from Trent Horn here on Catholic Answers Live.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
We're back here on Catholic Answers Live. Sherry Brown Rigg in for Cy Callett, and Trent Horn is here. We're asking the question, why aren't you religious? So if you are in that boat, if you are someone who's, I'm not religious, I might be spiritual, or I have no faith at all, call in. We want to hear why. And if you are also maybe someone who's struggling with religion, we like to hear from you as well. Or if you're someone who's got some friends who aren't religious, that's a good reason to call in to 888-318-7884. Now, before we get back to the phones, though, I want to tell you about something that we've got for you that you're going to love. Because right now, a lot of kids are going back to school. Last week and this week, I've seen more first day of school pictures on Facebook, Trent, than I care to even count. They're everywhere. And I saw a good one that was, I think it said something like the 3,433rd day of work. And it was a guy with a backpack on, and he was just kind of hunched over going to work. So works for us, too.
Right.
But going back to school in the 21st century presents a lot of challenges that parents today never dreamed of. And that's why we have developed a new ebook. It's called The Catholic Answers Back to School Primer for Parents. You can download your copy. It's free. Do it today by clicking on the free ebook banner at shop.catholic.com. And that's The Catholic Answers Back to School Primer for Parents. You can get it for free, F-R-E-E, at shop.catholic.com. You know, it's kind of interesting. We've been talking about people falling away from the faith, Trent, and my own husband did that. And he was raised Catholic. And in fact, his mother was my RCIA sponsor. I joined the church when we got married. And he became a psychotherapist. And this is what he points to for his reason for leaving the church, was that he counseled a lot of priest sexual abuse victims.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even necessarily so much the priests that he was angry at. He was angry at the hierarchy of the church.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these people who were now adults were abused because priests had been moved around from church to church back in the days when they really thought these kinds of things could be cured, quote unquote.
Right.
That's a very difficult thing to overcome that.
And I think what's understandable here is to have anger towards those within the leadership of the church when they have failed in their duties to the church. And this is just nothing. This is nothing new. I was doing a historical study not too long ago. I did a podcast for my trendhornpodcast.com. And I do these little free-for-all Friday episodes. The Friday episodes, you never know what you're going to get. They're kind of miscellaneous. And I did one on the Black Death of the 14th century. And so, and people are familiar with that. It's been like two-thirds of European population was wiped out by the bubonic plague. And it was interesting, and I was listening to a lecture series on this by the Great Courses. And in one of the lectures, it talked about the faith and how the Catholic Church was affected by the Black Death. And what's interesting is what happened were that the good priests during the plague were all killed off in the first year or two of the plague. Because, you know, they're the ones who went and administered last rites to the dying.
Sure.
And then they would get the plague, and then they would die as well. And so what happened by the end of the plague was that most of the priests who were left were the bad ones, the cowards who kind of fled into the countryside and didn't do anything. And so we were stuck for a long time, near for hundreds of years, with many priests who were ill-informed, who were morally unscrupulous. And that actually served as kind of a foundation for the Protestant Reformation, that Luther's complaints were valid in many places because you had crummy priests or priests who were selected to fill vacant roles in parishes who were simply not formed for the task. And so even there, we have the hierarchy failed or did the best they could, at least in that situation, and led to heartache and despair for people. But the lesson that I would take from that is we've seen this all throughout church history, that God created a church to save us from our sins. He gave us a means to gather all people together to Christ, to receive him in the sacraments. And it doesn't surprise me that in the devil's continual campaign against our ability to have eternal life with God, he will attack the church and do what he can to tear it apart. Now, I am not saying that sexual abuse or the sins of the leadership can be blamed solely on the devil, like the devil made him do it or something like that. That is not what I am saying at all. I am just saying is that we should not be surprised that those who are called to serve Christ may end up failing him. And so we say around here, Catholic Answers, all the time, you don't want to leave Jesus because of Judas. You know, we can't do that. At the end of the day, that if we do that, what are we left with? That we have two options here. We have some Catholics, lay and faith clergy, who have failed us in some circumstances. Our options are we can leave Christ's church and leave Christ along with them, or we cannot imitate their behavior and still stay faithful to Christ and faithful to his church, even when some of the shepherds are not. And also by uniting ourselves with the clergy, with the shepherds who are good, who are faithful. It really grinds my gears a little bit, Sherry, that at the one hand, we should acknowledge sins within the church that ought to be called out. But at the same hand, if we say just blanket the hierarchy, the bishops, the priests, how sad for the priests who and the bishops who toil day in and day out that have not done anything wrong and are trying their best to lead people to Christ. Are we going to abandon them too because it's convenient? I can't do that.
I am with you on this. I have a brother who is a priest.
Yeah.
A very good priest, very, very devout, and pours himself out. And I also actually run a little apostolate that promotes prayer for priests.
They need it.
They do need it. And that to me is the answer to this question. And Noe had an off-air question that was really pretty much the same thing here.
Yes.
So Noe, I hope this has really helped you as well. But that's the answer for all of us, the faithful Catholics, is, you know, go deeper. Go deeper and pray more. You become holier. Don't leave, as you just said, Trent, so beautifully, don't leave Jesus because of Judas.
There's actually a good book by Rod Bennett. He'll be speaking at our Catholic Answers conference in a few weeks. And we still have a few spots open, actually, if anyone's interested. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com. So Rod Bennett will be speaking there. He wrote a book recently, a very good one, called Bad Shepherds. It's a book all about the bad popes. We've had some doozies. But how, and the holy people who thrived among these bad ones. And also, people say, how can you believe this is Christ's church given all these bad popes? You know, not all. There have been, the vast majority of the popes have been saints, or they've been people who have been morally upright.
Yeah.
How can you believe in the church given all these, some of these bad popes, and some of them are doozies? I say, well, actually, I believe in the church, that the church is still here and still teaching the faith in spite of these bad popes. That you've had popes who did horrible things. They had children during their pontificates. They, you know, one of them dug up their predecessor and put him on trial and threw his body into a river. Like, one, you know, all these different kinds of things. So one sold the papacy twice at the same time, but they never abandoned Christ by teaching heresy. In fact, some of them fought heresy. And so that even given these putzes and these degenerates that have sometimes occupied the See of Peter or have been elevated to the level of bishops, the church is still here. That it's still here. It is not crumpled, and it has not fallen into teaching heresy. And that is owed to the cares, to the gift of the Holy Spirit that is animating the church that Christ gave us.
Proof that it's divine. Yeah.
In spite of our foibles, sins, and the like.
The church would be great if it weren't for all those Christians.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And there's the other thing, by the way. You want a church that doesn't have hypocrites? Good luck. As soon as you find that church and you join it, now it's been tainted. So, you know?
So. Well, let's see if we can get one call in before our break. But Christy is in Lafayette listening to 90.5 FM. Hey, Christy, welcome to Catholic Answers Live. What's your question for Trent?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm a credo Catholic. I've been Catholic all my life, and I have a great foundation. I love our faith.
Sure.
But a lot of our young people in college age are leaving in every age around this area. And they had a young lady. I asked her, why are you leaving the Catholic faith? Because I knew she went to a Catholic high school in our area. I said, why are you leaving the Catholic faith? And she said, for freedom. Freedom. God saved us on the cross. You know, we have freedom. And it just caught me off guard. I didn't know how to respond, and I was wondering if Trent could help me out with that.
Well, that's interesting, Christy. You say, so it sounds like that she's still Christian. She just believes that God gave us freedom, so she does not have to belong to Christ's church. I would ask her, what does she mean by that? I guess I would ask her, yeah, we have freedom, but what does God want us to do as Christians? Are we free as Christians to do anything we want? And be very clear about that. So would that mean as a Christian, I could blaspheme Jesus, or I could commit murder or adultery? Now, it depends, Christy, on this. Most other Protestants will say, no, you're not free to do that. So that would show, oh, well, you. So there's some things as Christians we can't do, and other things we're obligated to do, like that Jesus died on the cross, but I'm not free to stop having faith in him, right? I have to have faith in Jesus. So I would say that we agree that we have freedom to choose the good, but with our freedom comes responsibilities to God and to neighbor. And so I guess I would ask her, what responsibilities do we have to God? And if she's Protestant, point her, where does the Bible say that? What does the Bible say? What does Jesus say? In John chapter 6, Jesus says we have to eat his flesh and drink his blood, for example. We have to receive him in the Eucharist. And that empowers us and gives us freedom to go out and to do good in the world and be united to him. So I think I would ask questions to narrow down what she means by that. Agree with her, we have freedom, but that doesn't mean we as Christians can do anything we want. God still desires us to live in a certain way, and we have to ask, what does God want from us, and how do we know that? So that might be a path I would go. Is that helpful for you? Christy?
No.
I think we lost her.
Lost her.
Hopefully... Christy, if you're able to get back on the line or the queue, I wanted to send you my book, Why We're Catholic. So if we get a hold of you later, if you call back and we get your email address, I wanted to send you my book because there's a chapter in there that deals with the question how to get to heaven, about salvation, what we as Catholics believe, and it might have helped you to explain that to your Protestant friend. Though, if you'll notice about freedom, there is a sect of Christians, a sizable sect actually, who believes we have... They take this idea of freedom to a radical extreme. They're descendants of the Antinomians from the Reformation. They believe as Christians, you are so free, you don't even have to follow the moral law. You could commit murder, you could commit blasphemy, and you could still be saved. It's an astounding belief that I actually cover in depth in my book, The Case for Catholicism, if there are listeners who want more of my response to that.
Okay, you can get them all at Catholic.com. All right, well, we are up against that break, but we've got a lot more. Jordan will get to you next, so hang on. Here's the number if you'd like to join us, 888-318-7884. More to come. Why aren't you religious?
Catholic Answers Live.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament, from the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important. This pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew she wanted those things, that in them, somehow, she would find God. Over the years, as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
And indeed we are here, Sherry Brownrigg in for Cy Kellett on Catholic Answers Live. Halfway through hour two on this great Monday, Why Aren't You Religious? We've opened it up to folks who are listening who aren't religious and would like to tell us why at 888-318-7884. And also folks who might be struggling just a bit or struggling to answer questions from non-religious folks. And we have a lot of calls lined up here, Trent, so let's just head back. Jordan is up next. Jordan is in Kansas. Hey, Jordan, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I really like your guys' show. I like to tune into it on several different ways, but I do appreciate it. One thing that I've run up against is, I'd say within the last several years here, I kind of got slapped and needed to turn some things around. I found my faith again, and I have somebody that's really close to me, and they kind of question how that can happen that fast. And when we discuss and have these interactions on the Catholic faith and trying to dig into it a little bit deeper, I kind of come up against this wall of this works for you, and I can see how it's working for you, and it looks really good, but it's not really my kind of thing. And yeah. And they're not afraid to say that, and I don't really know how to respond.
Yeah. Well, Jordan, I use an example in my book, Why We're Catholic, that I think is helpful in these situations, because you'll hear people say, well, religions, that's not for me. And the problem is, I think they're confusing our religious truth claims, the claims of our faith. They think that we're only making subjective claims, that we're talking about our personal opinions or feelings rather than objective facts about the world. So like if I say mint chocolate chip ice cream is the best ice cream, you might not feel that way. Sherry may not feel that way. They may say mint chocolate chip ice cream doesn't work for me. And that's fine because it's just subjective. It's how we feel. But if I say, hey, if you leave that mint chocolate chip ice cream out in the blazing hot sun, it's going to melt. And the other person says, oh, well, that advice doesn't work for me. They could say that, but the ice cream is still going to melt. It's objective, regardless of how they feel. So I would say to them that they're looking at religion. The analogy I use are shoes and medicine. And I actually used to sell shoes. It was one of my first jobs in right after high school. Oh, goodness. I sold women's shoes, actually. So I had to be the art of the sales and try to get people to buy shoes and hope that they really enjoyed these shoes, you know, and get the sale for that. And so some people, when they buy shoes, and you buy shoes, you walk around in the shoe and you'll say, this doesn't really feel right to me. And they don't buy it. They want a good shoe is one that feels good on your feet. And that's the criteria. Okay, so that would make sense with something like shoes. But imagine if we did that with medicine. What if we said, a good medicine is something that feels good to me. So there's a bunch of pills in front of me. And I said, well, I'm just going to try each pill. And the one that tastes the best or feels the best, I'm going to try that one. That is a horrible way to decide what medicine is good for you. Because it may feel good right now, but it could end up killing you tomorrow. Or it may taste really bad, but it's what you need to cure you from the disease that you have. So I think you might need to show them, look, religious claims about whether God exists, whether Jesus rose from the dead, how are we saved from our sins? How do we get to heaven? How do we avoid hell? Those are factual claims that have right or wrong answers. And so the right answer can bring us a lot of joy and peace, and the wrong answer can bring us a lot of suffering in this life and the next. So we need to figure out what is the answer that what is the answer that is right, not just the one that is right, quote unquote, for me. Not the one that just feels good, but the one that just is good because it's true. So does that make sense, that kind of an analogy?
Yes. Yeah. No, that helps. And I know, if anything, I've listened to enough. You can't force them.
You can't. All you can do is put up
Yeah. Is their decision.
It is, but what you can do is you can put a pebble in their shoe. You can ask them good questions, like so these friends you have, Jordan, do they believe in God, or are they just kind of maybe not even that?
Yes. No, they are almost at the, I think I may have heard, well, I believe in God, but I don't, I'm faithful, but I'm not a churchgoer.
I
believe
see.
In God, but I don't need to do, you know, and so, honestly, I just don't know quite how to combat it yet, but I do thank you for those analogies, that those were good.
Well, I'd love to send you some more. So Jordan, hang on the line. We'll get your email. I'll send you Why We're Catholic. And I'll send you the electronic copy, and you have my permission to forward that copy onto your friends, and feel free for them to read it. And you guys could always have a discussion about it. But I think you'll want to ask them, okay, you believe in God. What do you think happens after we die? Do you think God loves us? If he loves us, has he shown it? How do you know that? And if God is real, shouldn't we do what he wants and try to unite ourselves to him? And by asking these questions, I think you can show that a person's non-religious beliefs, they may be okay right now in this present moment, but they don't really stand up to wait, especially when bad things happen, and especially when we confront our own mortality, that the resounding joy and peace that we can have from knowing that we'll be united to God for all eternity because we are in friendship with him. That's why St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, he says, I love the Douay Rheims translation of it, O death, where is thy sting? You know, O death, where is thy sting? That death is, of course, sad because death is not a natural for us. We were never made to die. But even though we die, as Christ says, we shall live through him. But we'll live through him by being in communion with him. And we would want that for your non-religious friends as well. So stay on the line. Give our call screener your email. I'll send you a copy of Why We're Catholic, and you can always forward that on to them.
Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate that. Great call. And let's move actually to a different part of the country now. We've got Sharon, who is in Portland, Oregon, at her friend's Modern Day Radio. Hey, Sharon, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, thank you, Trent. I appreciate your style. You've given a lot of great advice over the years. I myself am Catholic and have remained very close to my faith. Mm-hmm. My sister is much younger than me and grew up during a period of my mother's loss in her faith. Mm-hmm. So she floundered a lot. She tells me that she has become Muslim. I don't think I believe it. But if I ask her the number of reasons why she opts not to be part of the family's faith, that means Catholicism. Her latest was that the church hoards gold, that the Catholic Church is the number one owner of artwork and gold. And I don't really know how to battle wits like that. I would normally say something along the lines of that the money that we pull in goes to ministries. My church has, you know, well over 100 of them just out of one parish.
Right.
So what do I say to this? I told her I would find an answer. I'm sure this will not convince her because she'll just come up with something else. But
sure.
I wasn't sure what to say. And I have come across that before where people have accused the Catholic faith of hoarding, you know, riches and prizes and things.
Yeah, nobody ever says about Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, though. Or the Smithsonian, or they've got all these treasures and other things like that. I guess what I would say is first, when people make these claims, make them be put on the defensive by asking them, well, how do you know that? How do you know the church has the most gold or art in the world? I don't know if that's correct or not. The church, if the church owns large quantities of gold, it's not things like gold bars. It's not like in Fort Knox, the church just has a bunch of gold bars in a vault somewhere. But the gold is usually, it's part of artworks, it's part of sculptures, or it's part of frames of paintings. So we could take this as a general direction that the church has a large collection, it owns a large collection of highly valuable art. Okay, and I would say, ask them, what's wrong with that? So once again, we should ask the questions. What's wrong with the church owning valuable pieces of art? Because in most of these cases, these pieces of art were created by faithful Catholics in order to adorn churches, in order to honor and glorify God through artistic works. You have the works of, you know, Michelangelo, the Sistine Chapel, the works of Caravaggio. I mean, the list goes on and on. That as human beings, all human beings want to honor God through their artistic works. You said your sister's Muslim, right?
She claims to have converted to it, yes.
She claims to have converted, right. So I would say there that even in the Muslim faith, in Islam, while they are very hesitant about images, they still want to glorify God through magnificent mosques. You have the Hagia Sophia in Turkey, for example. You have these magnificent mosques with these amazing geodesic murals on them. I mean, just the real estate value alone would be worth a lot of money. And yet, you would never expect Muslims to sell. You say to the Muslim population, Islam is wrong. It should sell all of its artworks and all of its beautiful architecture. They would say, well, no, this glorifies our faith, and this is something that we have received from our ancestors, and we pass on to our descendants. And the same is really true for the Catholic faith, that if we took this beautiful art, if we sold it, somebody else really would hoard it. It would be kept in some rich person's collection, or it would be kept away from the public, and it wouldn't be that treasure that the church offers for the faithful to be able to come and see. I mean, I go to Rome. Many of the most beautiful pieces of art in Rome are in churches. Anybody can walk in at any time to be able to behold. It wouldn't be the case if they were in some rich person's vault in their multimillion-dollar mansion. So I would say that the beautiful art that we have, it's the same as if your grandfather gave you a watch that his grandfather gave him, that you would want to give that to your children, and it's a testimony to the value of your family and your familial bonds. If you just turned around and sold it, you would be depriving other people in your family who maybe have not even been born yet. And we can make the similar analogy and apply that to the church's collection of art that it uses to glorify God. And honestly, there's different ways people come to know God and believe in the faith. There's arguments, like what I have in my books, for example, or at Catholic Answers Live. Some of it, though, it's just when you're in a beautiful cathedral or you look at a beautiful painting of the child Jesus, it just clicks for people. Why wouldn't the church be the custodian of these pieces of art that glorify God and lead people to him? So a lot there, but is that helpful?
Oh, very. Thank you very much for making it logical. I appreciate your answer.
Happy to do so. Thanks for calling.
Sharon, you're going to have to call back and let us know if it helped.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Sharon. We appreciate that. All right. So we still have more to come here. Trent Horn, why aren't you religious? If you are someone who is, well, maybe spiritual, not religious, or you've just chucked the whole thing, as I heard an actor say once, or if you're just really struggling with this, maybe someone in your life, like Sharon, has someone in her life that's struggling with the faith. We want to hear from you. And we've got just a little bit left in the show, but you might be able to squeeze in 888-318-7884. And we'll be right back here on Catholic Answers Live.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
why
a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Coming up tomorrow, Tim Staples on an open forum. It's going to be a great Tuesday edition of the open forum. Hey, you probably have heard about this, but there's a Pew Research poll that was recently released. And Trent, you talked about this last hour.
Yeah.
It showed that just one third of U.S. Catholics agree with their church that the Eucharist is the body and blood of Christ. It was kind of shocking for a lot of us, wasn't it? I mean, just like me.
It is, but you also have to dig down into these studies. I do so in an episode on my podcast. It's just a few days ago. You could check it at trenthornpodcast.com. And there's certainly things that are disconcerting about it. But with many of these surveys, you should always be watchful when something says, survey shows Catholics believe X.
Right.
Because the problem is, just saying you're a Catholic, quotation marks, that can mean a wide variety of things. You can have someone, there's a Catholic who goes to daily mass every day, fully believes everything the church teaches, and then someone who says that they're Catholic and goes to church once a year on Easter and doesn't believe in it, hardly any of the church's moral teachings, or rejects many of them, or rejects most of the church's teachings and just says they're Catholic because that's how they were raised. So when it says Catholics believe X, we have to drill down deeper. Well, what kind of Catholics? In the survey itself, it shows that for Catholics that go to Mass weekly, so if they go to Mass weekly, then 67% of them believe in the real presence. But even among those who go weekly, only 14% of those Catholics know the church's teaching and reject it. So there's like 70% of weekly going Catholics who know the teaching and believe it. And there's something like, what would it be then, 16% who go weekly, but they actually don't know the right teaching. That's a failure of catechetics. We have to,
Right. Yeah. We
got to get them the right teaching, and they'll believe that. So among those who go weekly, say, oh, okay, well, it's a small percentage there that still reject the church's teaching. It's more those who only go monthly or seldom or never, that among those you get 70, 87% who reject the church's teaching on the real presence. And that's not surprising because they don't believe it, so that's why they don't go at all. They don't go to Mass. So here, and as I show in my podcast, we have to show people the biblical foundation for this belief and its practical ramifications, why it matters so much that the Eucharist is not just a symbol, but because Jesus is truly present, it takes away our sins and completes the new Passover sacrifice that was given to us on Calvary.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and regardless of really how the numbers break out, I think it's really up to all of us to learn as much as we can about the church's teaching on the Eucharist and
right.
to help get that truth out. We're making our book, 20 Answers, the Eucharist, available for just $1 a copy for either the book, or you can get the ebook version if you like to read it on your Kindle or your computer. And that is a 75% savings. Whenever I see that phrase, 75% savings, I start to get my credit card out. But just go to shop.catholic.com, and you can search for 20 Answers, the Eucharist. And this is one of those things that's really, it's good to get copies for yourself and your friends at a buck a piece. I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
And I can also vouch for the author of 20 Answers, Eucharist. I would say he knows what he's talking about, hopefully so, because he's me. I wrote that at particular 20 Answers booklet, so I think it'll be helpful for anyone who talks about this subject more.
Well, that's great. Yeah, thanks for writing that, because I think that definitely is something we need to get out there to folks. Even good Catholics don't really know how to talk about it, so it's really one of those books that all of us should get. Mm-hmm. All right, heading back to the phones, Robert is up next, and Robert is in San Bernardino, California, listening on Sirius XM 130. That's EWTN's channel there. Hey, Robert, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Well, thank you very much.
How can we help you today?
Yeah, I had a question for you. I've been a believer pretty much my whole life since I was 13. Hmm. Attended church pretty regularly. I am feeling very led toward the Catholic Church. Hmm. I belong to a church now that is more evangelical, and it's a non-denominational church. But I'm feeling led more to the Catholic Church. I've never been in a Catholic church before. Mm-hmm. Never been into a mass or a confession, but I wondered what the steps were to become Catholic and how I could find a good church.
Sure. Robert, do you know anyone who is Catholic?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, in the absence of that, then, you could look at different parishes nearby. You can look up Catholic parishes online. There's a great website called Catholics Come Home. It's put up by my friend Tom Peterson. And I think that it has a list of parishes near you where you can go to learn about the Catholic faith. It's called Catholics Come Home. And I'll get your email at the end of this because I want to send you that resource, among others. In order to be received into the Catholic faith, you would go through what's called the Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults, or RCIA. I went through the rite myself when I was 17 years old. And through that, I was baptized, confirmed, and received my first Eucharist. If you've already been validly baptized, which it sounds like you have if you're evangelical, then you would just receive the sacrament of confirmation and Eucharist to be received into the church. But RCIA is a process where you go, if you attend it, you're not making a formal commitment to become Catholic. It's a way for you to learn more about the Catholic faith. So this is actually this is very providential, Robert, you're talking about this, because the fall is usually a period where RCIA begins, and it's called the period of inquiry. It's for people who are interested in becoming Catholic can attend RCIA meetings and can go and learn about the faith and be taught about it through an RCIA leader, and they usually meet other people who are interested as well. Through that process, if they decide that they want to become Catholic, then they would go through other rites to prepare to be received, and usually they would be received at the Easter Vigil, which is, but if there's a case of necessity, like you're, you know, in danger of dying or something like that, or being deployed overseas, it could be expedited. So I think RCIA, or at least visiting with a Catholic priest, would help be able to walk you through that. Also, I think reading and learning about the Catholic faith would be helpful. I will send you a copy of my book, Why We're Catholic. And at the end of that book, it talks about RCIA and how that works. Why We're Catholic may be a good book for you in that regard. So I will send you that if you give our call screen or your email. Other good resources would be the compendium. The Catechism of the Catholic Church is great to read, but don't let it overwhelm you. It's pretty thick. There's a thinner version of it called the Compendium of the Catechism, and that's just a list of what the Church's teachings are. And if you go through that, you'll be more formally familiarized with the teachings of the Catholic Church. One last thing I will caution you is this, is that if you decide that you are interested in joining Christ Church, the devil will throw everything he can at you to stop you. And one of his favorite things to do that is through Catholics. You'll run into people, bureaucrats in parish offices who are rude or don't give you the time of day, RCIA programs that are just horrible, that are run terribly. It's like whenever I hear someone like you says they want to become Catholic, I wish I could personally take you under my wing to make sure everything goes fine in your formation. But practically speaking, I can't. So I just want to give you that encouragement. If you run up against obstacles, to see those not as God's way of telling you you're making a wrong decision, but as the devil trying to keep you from the fullness of his truth. So I want to send you those resources, and that might be the path that I would go down. So do you have any other questions, Robert? Any other way I can help?
No, I think you answered my questions for you. I appreciate the time.
No problem. So yeah, give our call screen your email. I'll send you my book, and I'll send you that link to Tom Peterson's website, Catholics Come Home. And hopefully, and I'll ask our listeners. So listeners, you've got your homework. I want you to pray for Robert that he is guided to a Catholic, a lay Catholic, a priest, whoever, our RCA program, someone to faithfully introduce the faith to him and help answer his questions during this period of inquiry. So listeners, you got homework to do. You can't just sit around and listen to radio all day. This is, it edifies, but also I need you guys to help me out here too, all right? So thank you so much for calling, Robert.
Didn't know we were going to get homework, Trent.
And there will be a quiz. There will be a quiz tomorrow. It'll be fill in the blank.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in one more call before the end of the show. Here's Anonymous. Hey, Anonymous, you are on the air. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live. What's your question for Trent?
Hey, Trent, big fan. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem. Thank
you. Quick question for you. I'm a recent convert, converted in Easter from a Southern Baptist tradition. And the wife has not jumped ship yet and is a little alarmed at my jumping ship. She has a more complicated history with Catholicism than I did.
I see.
And so in our discussions, and I'm not really trying to convert her per se, but just give her a good example of what a Catholic wife looks like.
Sure.
She's had poor examples in the past.
Right.
But the topic of relativism has come up. And so she recognizes that God is truth, and that there's only one truth, and that we're different enough, especially in her mind, with the sacrament of baptism being the entrance to the church.
Yeah.
The Baptist tradition doesn't have that.
Right.
So she says, well, there's got to be one correct way. And so that's caused a lot of confusion for various reasons. And what is a good way to kind of help with that explanation?
Well, Robert is our previous caller. You're anonymous.
Yeah.
Anonymous, what is she concerned or confused about when it comes to baptism? I didn't quite catch that.
She sees the verses that I'm pointing to,
sure.
First Peter, Acts, that baptism is a necessity, forgive
right.
sins,
yeah.
you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So she sees that. She has the faith tradition of it's a, public display of, faith.
Baptism shows we're Christians. It doesn't make us Christians.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And so she's grappling between that. She has her beliefs, and now she has new information
right.
that makes sense. And so she's fighting with that. And there's a lot of complicated, family, past, and all that good stuff complicate that.
Is her family Catholic?
What's a good way? Yeah, dad was an ex-Catholic that converted, and so there's Catholics in the family that aren't very devout. So
yeah,
so Catholics from her experience are not very Christ-like people.
Well, I think then that there's your answer there, Anonymous. I think that your task as a husband is to be that Christ-like example to her, and to understand that she's on a journey and you want to walk shoulder to shoulder with her, not fight toe to toe. So to accommodate her. So for example, there you may be going to Baptist services with her and then going to Mass on the side to make sure you fulfill your obligation to go to Mass, but you walk with her by also going to her services and having these conversations with her. Stay on the line. I'll send you my book. Always happy to do that because we can talk for a while on air. The book will give you a lot. You could always call back for more. Stay on the line. I'll get you the book. And yeah, so be that example to her and plant those seeds with those faithful, Christ-filled conversations with her. And honestly, there's no silver bullet. She's struggling with the truth. You got to let the truth and the Holy Spirit work its way through her. So yeah. I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Anonymous. Yeah, and let's all do that. And thank you, Trent. I will be back tomorrow with Tim Staples on an open forum with Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much. Have a great evening.